Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, welcome along to a brand new Writer's Routine Roundtable. My name's Dan Simpson, thank you so much for listening. In this episode, it's a bonus episode. We've got four fantastic uplit slash rom-com authors on. Not really sure what the genre's called actually at the moment, but we'll figure that out in the chat. We're talking writing, how they do it, how they plan, how they feel about their genre, and how lockdown has affected their creativity. Now, we've got a couple of authors on who have been on the show before, and we've also got some debuts. Laura Jane Williams will be with us. She talked us through her routine last year ahead of her book Our Stop. Her new one is The Love Square, and she joins us. Also, Nicola Gill is on. She came on earlier this year to talk about her debut, The Neighbours. And she's already got another book coming out this summer. Talk about being busy. You can find out more about that in the chat. Also, Hannah Sunderland joins us. Her debut is Very Nearly Normal. And from the Moderate Mum blog, we've got Charlene Alcott with us too. Her newest novel is More Than a Mum. It's a brilliant chat about all aspects of writing. I just love hearing writers talking about their craft and the way they work amongst themselves. It brings up things I don't think I would ever get in a regular chat that I do with the authors. Having more than one on, having the writers talking amongst themselves, I think helps us break into new ground, really. So let's get into it then. And I started by asking how lockdown has affected their writing routine. And Laura gets us going.
How have I been finding lockdown? How has my creativity been? I mean, as wild and rocky and unnerving and sublime as it is the rest of the time, to be honest, I've been on deadline. I have been one of those annoying people who have written a book during lockdown. But I will say, yes, I'm one of those annoying people who has written a book in lockdown. But had I not been contractually obliged to, I'm not sure it would have gotten finished. I think my biggest takeaway from lockdown is that throughout the creative process, the lows are lower. And so I've struggled to kind of bounce back as quickly as what I normally would have done. I don't know if anybody else has found that.
This was the thing about right at the start of lockdown, when I was hearing online, some authors were having a hard time getting their kind of creative juices going and writing their stories. And I was thinking, well, surely your life hasn't changed that much. You're still writing there in front of your laptop. Maybe you can't go to cafes. But how hard has it been for you, Nicola?
So it's interesting, the whole writing during lockdown thing, because unlike Laura, I haven't actually been contractually obliged to write my book because I had a two-book deal. But I still have been writing, and I think with me that's just spurred on by fear, really, that, you know, I've sort of achieved this dream and I don't want it all to be whipped away from me. But I really agree with what Laura said, which is just that the lows are lower. And I think you're right, Dan, that, you know, from a practical point of view, it shouldn't make much difference because, you know, a lot of us, you know, work from home anyway. So really, what difference? But I think that when you get to a bit that you're struggling with, the sort of general mood pervades a bit, and then it's quite hard to push through and you just have to make yourself do it.
Charlene, how do you feel about this?
I am very embarrassed by how optimistic I was at the start of lockdown. I envisioned around this point I would have a completely polished novel, and I really haven't managed to do anything. And I do think it's easier for me to be creative when I'm busier and have a bit more inspiration from the people that I'm meeting, and less opportunity for procrastination. If I only have 2 hours in a day free, I tend to use them to write. If I have more, I tend to use them to potter. So that's what's been happening for a couple of months, unfortunately.
Well, you started your writing kind of in chaos, didn't you, Charlene? Because you did the Moderate Mum, which was, that was a blog online, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So you started doing a blog online, kind of charting being a moderate mum, and now everyone's in the same kind of boat as you, as trying to write in the chaos of everyone being there all the time.
Yeah, and when I started my first book, I was in the process of becoming a single parent, and it was a really difficult time, and actually writing was an amazing escape, and it helped me find calm in the chaos. And I haven't been able to do that as successfully in this, probably because parenting life has taken up a lot more time with schools being closed. But it is it has been a really good time to think about forgiving myself in terms of what kind of parent I am, how much I'm managing to do in all areas of life. And I think that that will hold me in good stead in the future, I hope.
I think at least two of you, Hannah and Laura, you've had books published during lockdown. Hannah, how was the release of Very Nearly Normal in amongst all of this kind of mayhem?
It wasn't what I expected it would be. I had this like idea that it was going to be big book launch with all like my friends and family, and I would be able to go to a shop and actually see it there. And obviously none of that could happen. I don't know. It's been like, it has been a bit disappointing, like, cause of all the build up towards it. But now seeing everyone's reaction to it, like people have, like book Instagrammers, other authors have all kind of clubbed together to kind of promote each other's work, which I found really nice.
And Laura, I know that you've joined us on the show about a year ago to kind of run through your routine. How has it changed for you being in lockdown? I know that you said you're contractually obliged to get your story down, so you need to do it. How have you found you're sitting there day to day? Has anything changed? Have you had to adapt much?
Building on what Charlene was just saying about the self-forgiveness, practicing a lot of forgiveness. I've been practicing a lot of forgiveness with myself as well. I think I've always held it in my mind that a proper grown-up and a proper functioning member of society is at their desk by 9 and works until 5. And it just... that is not the case for storytellers. It doesn't work that way. Or if it does work that way for you, fantastic, I'm thrilled for you. But what I am learning, I've actually written 2 books since we last spoke, Dan. And in that time, what I'm learning is it takes me all day to kind of, for my mind to kind of quiet, for me to finally settle. And I don't have children, so I can be very flexible with my time. So there's no point sort of punishing myself for feeling more comfortable and more able to write when it's getting dark outside. I really, during lockdown, have given myself the space to go, do you know what? Yeah, I've spent a lot of time in an old T-shirt and a pair of pants with a glass of wine from about 6 o'clock through till maybe from like 5 till 10, I find this really magic hour for me. And I've always known that, but it's only in lockdown where there's literally nowhere else to go anyway, that I've really just let myself enjoy it. And I intend to continue enjoying it moving forward, I will design the structure of my day for as long as I've got the flexibility to do that.
Nicola, how about you? Have you said that you're writing not under contract now, you're just writing because you want to keep, you know, want to strike while the iron's hot. When we spoke, I remember you were very big on your running, very big on your exercise. You were getting to work early so you'd have time to write there. How has lockdown affected your routine? How have you had to adapt?
I think lockdown's affected my routine. Well, it's difficult because when I wrote The Neighbours, I was working full time. So I very much had to structure my writing around a full time job. So I actually had very little flexibility, hence the getting up very early and stuff. But I am kind of a morning person anyway. I think what's different now is that because I'm freelance, I do have a bit more control over my day and the ability to sort of structure it as I want it. And I think, you know, Laura's absolutely right. You have to do what's right for you. And for me, I think that is mornings, really. I think as the day goes on, I become increasingly useless. You know, really, by the evening, I'm only really able to possibly read other people's books on a good night, or, being more honest, probably just watch lots and lots of terrible things on Netflix. So I think you just have to do what's kind of best for you. But I think what's really different about lockdown is that obviously everyone else is home too. So my, you know, my two sons and my husband are all at home as well. So that's an adjustment as well.
Speaking about Netflix there, I mean, I think we've all been kind of strongly binging over the last few months. How does, Hannah, you can answer this, please. How does surrounding yourself with other people's stories affect the way that you tell stories? I mean, are you, when you're binging episodes of The Sinner or whatever it is, are you learning just general storytelling practice?
Yeah, I think that seeing how other people create stories and structure them is really important to how you do it yourself, because you can, if you watch enough, like a bigger span of TV or film, you see how different people structure their stories, and you can pick and choose from their way of doing it and trying to craft your own way. Like at the moment, I'm going back through Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which I don't think I've watched in about 10 years. And I think that looking back on it now, that like comedic way of the dialogue that they all share has actually like subliminally been quite influential in how I write.
Charlene, what about you? If you did a lot of blogging before you started writing stories, writing published novels, what was it, what kind of influenced, I hate the question about influences, so I'm sorry about that, but were there, what were you kind of looking out for in other books you were reading and things that you were watching on telly that you thought would be useful when you would come to write your story?
Definitely more television and film than books in terms of building suspense and really building connections with characters. I do love reading, but when I'm writing, I probably read less because I am liable to take on voices that I love. There was a big chunk of my first book which I reread and realized basically was Bridget Jones' Diary, so I try and like in gaps read books, but I'm always trying to stay with film and television. And I really like, even though I don't write it, watching crime, because they're so good at injecting mystery and pulling you through a story.
Now, before we crack on, you're all here because you are genre writers who write in the same genre. But just so I can nail this now, what am I calling that genre?
Whatever you want, Doc.
Okay. Could I call, just because, yeah, some people say, oh, women's fiction, which I'm just, you know, skin crawling, and I know that happens a bit sometimes as well. Am I good saying a rom-com? Is that fine?
I had a new one the other day, which I quite liked, and someone said it was domestic noir, which I thought sounded quite good. I quite like the sound of that. I don't know if that is what we all write, but I like the sound of it.
I think that's why I love the onset of, like, Uplit, the whole idea of uplifting literature, you know, is genderless. So if you like books that are like warm hugs. Maybe I think I don't mean to speak for anybody else, but maybe you'd like our stuff.
I'm down for that. I'm down for that. Yeah. I think that's great.
Me too. Good one, Laura. I like that. You've nailed it.
I've never heard that before. That's fantastic. It doesn't make my skin crawl. Now, right, so we've outlined that it is uplit. Rather open, and anyone can feel free to answer this. What do you think are the three main requirements for an uplit novel?
I've got quite a specific one, I think, in that when I was doing the first draft of Our Stop, the only redeeming male character was the male protagonist, and everybody else was scum, basically. And it was my agent pointed out that wasn't very uplifting, wasn't very nice, and didn't feel very encouraging about the world. And actually pivoting to create a cast of characters who were all flawed in their own way, but who were all had redemption, you know, redemptive qualities in their own way as well, felt a lot more actually realistic. And I know that was reflected in a lot of the feedback as well, that all of the characters seem to have heart. So I think you can write characters who maybe are a bit mean or a bit nasty, but you do have to make them three-dimensional. So for me, one of the things would be not everybody can be mean.
How much did that play into it then when you went to write The Love Square?
Well, what I say about writing Our Stop, I might have said this the last time you interviewed me, was that it took me from a cynic to a believer. So literally in rewriting the characterization of people in my book, I kind of rewired my own brain that instead of looking for the darkness, particularly in male characters, you know, letting people down or not coming through it with the romance, in rewriting that, I kind of rewrote in my brain, and it taught me to search for the good in people. So it came a lot more naturally in The Love Square to have, you know, I was just so excited to have not one love interest, not two love interests, but three. And I always joke, you know, hot men will never be in short supply in my books. And when I say hot men, what I mean is emotionally intelligent, switched on, funny, kind, generous men. Probably without me realizing, what I had done in Our Stop with rewiring my brain then meant in The Love Square I just had a whale of a time writing all of these fabulous characters.
So we've outlined that one of the requirements is that not all of your characters can be utter arses. Hannah, what about you? So when you were writing Very Nearly Normal, which has been billed as the unforgettable summer romance, what did you really want your story to be? If it was going to have a requirement, an uplit requirement, what would it be?
The way my characters talk to each other is quite sarcastic, dry humour, and I think that helps get across some of the more serious themes in the book, because it's kind of around you reaching an age where all of the people around you seem to be succeeding to sickening levels, and you're sat there in the daytime, like drinking soup out of a mug and not really knowing what the hell you're going to do with your day. So that can get quite kind of a bit of a drag, I guess, if your characters aren't bantering with each other. So I think humour is quite an integral part of what I wanted to get across in the book.
And Charlene, when you were coming to write your second book, which you published More Than a Mum, that was out in February, when you were coming to write that after the success of your first novel, how did you approach the difficult second book? You've written blogs for years. The first book is a success. How did you approach the second one?
Well, for me, drawing back to the question about what uplit is about, I feel that in each book I want the main character to learn something significant about themselves. And by complete coincidence, they also learn things that I want to learn. So the first book was about starting over after divorce, and More Than a Mum is about feeling like you're lost in motherhood and how to reclaim the part of yourself that isn't a mother. So really, when it came to my second book, I looked at where I was in my life and what I was finding difficult. I was starting a new career, also trying to be a good mum and trying to answer that question. And I suspect I'm going to have questions that I need answering for the rest of my life. And I hope that I'll be able to draw inspiration from that process.
That's interesting, because what you've said there almost echoes what Laura said earlier about how writing R Stop kind of made you believe, didn't you? That's what you said just a second ago. Is that the case for you, Nicola? Are you kind of right? And I think this might be with Uplit more than any other genre. I can't imagine people writing psychological thrillers much because they want to learn about themselves. Nicola, when you wrote The Neighbours and the new one We Are Family, how much are you trying to answer questions like about life and the world that you've got inside?
I think quite a lot, really. And I think, you know, to pick up on what the others have said, I think that the thing about Uplit that's nice is that you can explore some sort of fairly dark themes, but using humour as well. And I think there's a sort of, for me anyway, there's a sort of a thread of hopefulness that runs through everything, that I guess that more people in the world are good than bad. And I know there's a lot of bad things that are going on, but there's also a lot of kindness and, you know, a lot of people who go out of their way to help others. So I think it's kind of important to remember that, really, because sometimes we just get obsessed with all the bad things we're seeing.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Just a very quick interruption from me right before we get back to it to remind you that if you are loving the show, I'd love you to support us over on Patreon. If you've learned anything over 110 or so episodes, it's getting ridiculous, the numbers now. If you've learned anything along the way that has helped the way that you tell your stories, if it's helped your writing, maybe you do things differently and plan your day in a different, possibly better, more efficient way since you've been listening to us, please do help us out. Help us keep bringing you episodes with the best authors around as often as we can. And maybe we'll get a few more little bonus ones like these as well. You can get merch and thank yous online, patreon.com/writersroutine. You can even get your book to sponsor the show, which I think is pretty good. Like, if lockdown has slightly ruined your book launch, support us, we'll support you. I'll give you a huge plug, a massive push before some episodes, and hopefully we can get you a few more clicks online and draw more eyes to your prize. All you need to do, so simple, pledge to support us every month on Patreon. $1 or so a month will really help out. Doesn't need to be loads. Just something small like that really goes a long way. You can help us out over at patreon.com/writersroutine. Right, let's get back to it then with our round table, talking to rom-com uplit authors Charlene Alcott, Hannah Sunderland, Laura Jane Williams and Nicola Gill. In this half, we talk about the standard tropes of the genre. How much they think about that, how they actually write a happy ending as well. It sounds so simple, writing a happy ending, but I think it's something that so many writers in this genre don't manage too successfully, so it would be worth asking the questions to the writers who have actually pulled it off. And we pick things up talking about finding the audience. How do authors keep in mind who their reader is? And when they're writing an uplit, which traditionally is seen to appeal to one reader over another, whether they think about that? Do they really give it the time of day at all? We get to that. Laura kicks us off again.
I don't know, because in one respect, I suppose I am my own target audience, and that's how I keep things authentic and heartfelt, and quite like the others have said, exploring things that, you know, it's kind of the perfect excuse to explore things that mean something to me. I think it would be a sad thing that to assume that, you know, a protagonist is female. They say that readers are basically practicing empathy. So if you're capable of consuming fiction, you're capable of putting yourself in somebody else's shoes. I would hate to assume that a man or somebody who identifies as a man would walk past that in the shop and say, oh, no, not for me. I don't want to practice putting myself in those shoes. I know it happens. I'm not that naive, but I do think that's sad. It's funny, I've had it historically on dating apps. People, I'm straight, so matching with men, and when they say, oh, you know, what do you write? And I say, you know, it's kind of uplifting literature, focuses a lot on romance, and you'll often get the, ha ha, I've probably not read it then. And it's like, why is that ha ha? I don't get it. Are you incapable of putting yourself in a female protagonist's shoes? Like, half of our stuff was written from the point of view of a man. And actually, the blokes that have read our stuff have been very kind about it. So, you know, I'd be naive to say it's not gendered, but I do think that's sad. And if as a reader you want to count yourself out of what I produce based on that idea, then I think it's your loss, not mine.
Charlene, what about you with this one? Because the new one is More Than a Mum. You have the single Mum's Wish List. I mean, you're on brand, you're the moderate mum. How much are you thinking about the type of person who is going to read your story? Are they focused on mums? What's going on there?
Well, I've written two books where the main characters are mothers. And I think that's the classic write what you know. But similarly to Laura, I've had men read my book and say that they enjoyed it and related to it. And ultimately, we're trying to capture human experience and not one particular person's experience. And the novel that I'm writing now, I am writing with a male lead. So it will be interesting to see if that process is any different to me or if it makes me think about the reader in a different way.
Can I ask a follow-up question on that?
Go for it. Yeah, please do.
What has prompted the decision to write from the male point of view, Charlene?
Well, back to my answering of questions. The book I'm writing now is about trying to start a relationship with someone who has a child. And because that's sort of the thing I'm struggling with or finding challenging at the moment. And I think the really interesting part of that is the person coming into the family, what their experience is. And I think being a step parent is a really, really difficult role, and, you know, I like to explore the difficult things. I think that's where the interesting stuff is.
How have you found that then, Charlene? What did you do right at the start that helped you put yourself in someone else's someone else's that's quite different to you's mind?
Yeah, I mean, I always start a book with characters and try and get to really know the person, and actually sort of mind map them and their interests and everything. And then I just keep putting them in different scenarios and seeing how that person would react. Also, my main source of inspiration is gossip. So I just collect a lot of stories. And that helps me shape other people's experiences.
Now, with Uplit, and stemming on from rom-coms, as they might have been known earlier on, with Bridget Jones, you mentioned that earlier, character is key. But character can also be quite, formulaic's the wrong word, but perhaps stock on occasions. Hannah, how did you find writing a debut and figuring out who your characters realistically were and trying to make them three-dimensional, well-rounded, and just not playing to, Mr. Darcy?
Well, a lot, because my book's quite autobiographical in parts, my main character is partly based on me. So I obviously had a lot of insight into that. And I've put some people, I did warn them before the book was released that they might notice themselves in the book. So I have stolen a few people from my actual life and put them in. And I think choosing a character, some of them pop into your head completely fully formed, and they're like, this is how I would answer a question, this is what I would wear, this is the decision I would make in this situation. But others take a lot more getting your head around. And I think if you can pick little bits from people you know, maybe from aspects of other characters that you've seen, and just put them into one person, you can get quite a well-rounded, interesting character from that.
You were talking about writing and making it funny earlier on. How much are you thinking about that aspect of it? Maybe writing a joke, describing something in a way that's never been heard before, but that is also relatable. I mean, if I was writing Uplit, that would be something that would worry me a lot, you know, trying to make it casual, trying to make it that someone would actually read and say. How did you find that?
I have quite a sarcastic sense of humour anyway, so throwing that into the mix with the characters was quite easy for me. I think my main character's quite angry with the world, so I think if you've got a kind of snotty character there, it's easier to throw a sarcastic kind of dry sense of humour in to their character traits. But then you have the question of, is the audience going to, those that don't have a dry sense of humour, are they going to get the joke as much as someone who does? Yeah, but I've had pretty good feedback that people have been laughing out loud, so I think I did an okay job with it.
This is quite an open-ended one, so I'm sorry about this. Nicola, you can give it a stab. All of your books, if you look up any of your books on Amazon, it'll say, you know, the new feel-good rom-com, that's what it will say, or the feel-good Uplit. Very open-endedly, hard to answer, I know, but how do you make something feel good? How do you know that it will feel good at the end?
Oh, that's a great question. Nicola, go.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for that, Dan. Feel good, I think, maybe is just another word for Uplit, isn't it? It's just that sort of leaving people with that sense of hopefulness and enjoyment, perhaps, which is not to say that there aren't sort of weightier and sadder topics in the book. There are, but just that you can leave them with a sense of hope and joy, I guess.
Is it not as simple, Laura, as making sure the you know, the girl and the guy or whoever it is get together at the end?
I mean, when you are doing a rom-com, when you are setting out to write a romance, I think there is an exception. I know in kind of book reviewer circles, they use the HEA. So they talk about a HEA, happily ever after, because some of my books have been referred to as having like a fresh twist on the HEA. So I think readers would potentially feel robbed if there wasn't, you know, romantic protagonists getting together at the end. But quite like, well, all of us have touched on, really, it's about what they learn on the way, there has to, for any story to work, there has to be an element of transformation that gets undertaken. So I think what you ultimately know, okay, at the end you're going to get a happily ever after, but the reason you keep turning the page is because you're invested in how the transformation takes place in order to get to the happy ever after. I love that about Uplit, about rom-com, about romance. Ultimately, you probably know where it's going to end up, but that's not what you strap in for. You strap in for the journey.
I was just going to say that's exactly right. It is about the journey more than the thing. And actually, my books, the romance isn't necessarily the main part of it at all. So there might be, well, there is a romantic element to it, but that's not the main part of the story at all. The main part of the story in The Neighbours is the friendship between the two women, and the main part of the story in We Are Family is the relationship between the two sisters, really. And it's almost like a rom-com between them. That sounds weird, but you know what I mean.
No, I love that, because that's exactly the thing, isn't it? There's not one type of love. Like, romantic love exists, but platonic love, familial love, I explore self-love quite a lot. Readers are as interested in that as the happy ever after, you know, between two people at the end, for sure.
Sometimes books come along in a genre that completely change the way things are done. I'm thinking Gone Girl for psychological thriller. What would you say has really made you think about this genre? Are there any stories that you've read, Hannah, which have really made you wonder about how this can be done? Maybe it can be done differently. There are things in there that you want to take and use.
I was quite a big fan of Jojo Moyes and Cecilia Ahern and that kind, those kind of authors, and both of them take quite what could be distressing, kind of depressing topics, and wrap them up in something that's funny, or but doesn't like make fun of the topic itself, but just adds a bit of humor in to those topics. And I feel like that's the best way to get someone to talk about something, because if it's kind of softened with an edge of humor, you can get so much more across than if you just say, this is the point I want to talk about, this is the issue that I think is important. If you wrap that up in a little bit of humor, people are far more open to it. And I think that that's what those two authors do quite well in their works. And they've probably been influential into how I've gone about my writing.
Charlene, how about you? Has there been anyone that you've read along the way which has made you think about the convention of Uplit?
I like anyone who is just trying to reach a bit beyond a typical story. Sophie Tanner's Reader, I Married Me, which is just so much about womanhood and independence and anything that makes me think about the pressures that I've had put on myself by society in a different way, is really interesting to me. So I don't think, you know, you have to turn something on its head. You just have to like open a window to a different way of thinking about something. And that's exciting.
And I guess that my last question will be the same for all of you. What's up next then? I mean, Laura, you've been busy writing away during lockdown. What's happening next?
Well, The Love Square has come out in digital, but isn't out in paperback until August 6th.
Can I ask very quickly there about the difference between digital and paperback? I know that this might not be what your publishers want to hear, because Kindle is such a huge thing now. I mean, I've got my first Kindle for Christmas and I cannot get enough of the thing. Do you feel any different between not having a physical copy and it being digital as a writer?
Do you know what? Actually, I've had new intel on this in the past 24 hours. Personally, when I'm being sent a proof, like an early edition of another author's book to maybe give a blurb for, I prefer paperback. I take a paperback to bed with me every night, or a hardback. I love a physical copy. But I do understand that for a lot of readers, you know, that so many readers, you know, you look on Goodreads or the book bloggers that I follow online all have these challenges to, I want to read 50 books this year, I want to read 100 books. They're consuming several a week. And if you can feed that habit for a couple of quid a copy rather than £7 a copy, all power to you. I did read yesterday that sending out early copies of your books in paper format is basically killing the planet and means that smaller publishers can't afford to do it. So I am mindful now that I might actually invest in a Kindle myself purely for the early copies of other writers' stuff, and then I will save my hardback and paperback consumption for you know, the writing that I do for fun more than I do for work. But I just think my publisher Avon is format agnostic, so in whatever way people want to consume stories, they'll deliver it. And I just think that is such an equalizer. That I'm not here for any sort of snobbery around writing or books or publishing. Stories are stories. They make us more empathetic people. So I'm all for a 99p on Kindle, a £2.99 on Kindle, a £10 audio book. I mean, I'm literally looking at my bookshelf right now. I've even got, can you believe it, the audio of Our Stop on CD. People are still consuming things that way. I think we even sold some of them. So however you are ingesting stories, I'm all for it.
And I cut over your I cut over the first answer, the question that I asked you. The Love Square is out in a physical copy shortly. What have you been working on?
So the Love Square is out in August, and I've just submitted the first draft of a book that's going to be coming out next year, and that is called The Lucky Escape. Ooh.
Nicola, when we last spoke, you had published The Neighbours. That was kind of at the start of this year, wasn't it? And now you've got a new one out in September. We Are Family. You've kind of spoken about the sisters. I can't believe you're cracking up the book so quickly. How has that been? What is it about?
Oh, it's been a bit of a nightmare, to be honest, Dan. I look about 100 years older than when you last saw me. No, it's very exciting. We Are Family comes out on September the 3rd, and I really can't believe that I've, you know, got two books out in a year. It seems extraordinary. And then during lockdown, I've been writing my third book, which I've just about finished my first draft of. So, yeah, been busy.
You've been really busy, Nicola. I'd be dead.
I'm nearly dead, Laura. I'm glad that you can't see me, that we're just recording this.
Well, I didn't get any panicked emails from any of you wondering if it was going to be audio or visual. The last time I did it, I had everyone emailed me really panicked and be like, do I need to get dressed up? Do I need to do my hair? Do I need to get all that? And I was like, no, it's fine. And I'm, you know, I had none of those panicked emails from you. So there you go.
I will confess, I did put my mascara on just in case.
I was going to say, I drew my eyebrows on.
Hannah, so your debut, Very Nearly Normal, it's out right now. So what have you kind of learned from doing that book that's affecting maybe the story that you're writing now, or the next idea that you've got that you want to get out there?
Well, I've written my second book during lockdown, and I sent that first draft in last week. But I think more the thing that's influenced my writing the most from the first one is how the actual writing process works. So I'm kind of like editing as I go along now. So before, I just write a sentence and think, that's not very good, but I'll come back to it. We'll cross that bridge when we come to it. But now I'm kind of thinking, no, that's not good enough, and going straight back and self-editing. So I think I've cut my writing time in half, basically, because of what I learned from writing the last one.
Charlene, how's it been for you? What's up next?
Well, so More Than a Mum came out this year. Also, a couple of months ago, a collection called The Best Most Awful Job was released, which is a collection of 20 writers writing about motherhood. And it is a wonderful read for lockdown, because they're just short things that you can dip into and all really beautiful. And now I am going to try and finish my current novel before winter. I'm going to keep the goals broad right now.
Sometimes that's the only way to get anything done, though, isn't it? Like, if I sit down and say, I've got to write 3,000 words today, I inevitably write three. But if I sit down and say, as long as you write something today, babe, you've done all right, and then that's when I can write 4,000 words. It's mad. Keeping the objective broader, it's like psychological warfare. For me, it makes it easier.
And that is it for this week's bonus episode, the second ever Writer's Routine Roundtable. Love doing them. I will get a few more in the can, I promise. It's just, as you might imagine, four authors on today. Even though we're all still slightly stuck at home, you know, finding the time, organising everyone to do that, it sometimes takes a little bit of work. So just bear with me. I will get you some more, I promise. Thank you so much to Laura, Nicola, Charlene and Hannah for coming on the show. You can find out all about their new books at writersroutine.com. And on Friday, fingers crossed, we'll get an episode with Mark Grenside, who will be talking about going from being a Hollywood producer to writing books. Before then, for the rest of the week, something you can do, a little bit of homework, leave us a review on Apple. If you're listening through Apple Podcasts, leave us a review there. Also, give us a follow on Twitter and support us if you fancy over at patreon.com/writersroutine. And I will see you on Friday with Mark Grenside. Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Getting caught in the wrong shoes can interrupt your plans for the day, like when that 10% chance of rain ends up looking more like 100%. When the transition to fall and winter feels more like experiencing every season on the same day, there's the Allbirds Mizzle Collection. These shoes were made for misty morning walks, surprise snow days, and anything a trip to the dog park might bring. The whole collection brings together water-repellent technology and classic style, so you can stay warm, dry, and comfy during your everyday adventures. Cross off errands with the splash protection on the Wool Runner Mizzle. Dash through cold and wet weather with all-condition traction and reflective details on the Wool Dasher Mizzle. Or upgrade to next-level protection with the Mud Guard on the Wool Runner-Up Mizzle Plus. Go to allbirds.com and use code FRESHSOCKS for a free pair of socks with your purchase. allbirds.com, code FRESHSOCKS.